Good morning, good morning. So last week we did the beginning of Parshas Matos. Now we're continuing to the next topic. So it's a new topic today. Last week we did the whole topic of Nedarim, of the promises. So today we are continuing with a topic which is, if you want a title, it's an easy title. It is the war, and I'll give a bit more qualification what I mean by war. Unfortunately, we relate to that very much. It's the war of the Jewish people against the nation called Midian. Midian. Now, who's Midian? And just before I tell you who Midian is, what is this war? So this is a very unique war. Why do I say it's unique? Because A, it's not fought in self-defense. Say that. We're going to say it how it is. This is not a self-defense war. Midian was not at the moment attacking the Jewish people. And it is not even a war to increase their territory, because we are not going to conquer Midian. We are not going to make that part of the land of Israel. This is on the other side of the Jordan River. This is before Moshe Rabbeinu passes away. This is at the end of the 40 years of the Jewish people spending their time in the desert. And they are fighting this war because Hashem commands them to fight this war. So before we understand why, what's this war? Who is the nation of Midian? Where do we know them from? Where's the first place we know them from? I don't know if you remember going back 40 years.
Yisro and Yosef.
Exactly, Yisro. That was last week's parasha. Moshe Rabbeinu, we know when he ran away from Egypt, when Paro wanted to kill him before he came back to take the Jewish people out, we know he ran away, and he ended up in a country called Midian. Midian is, as we say, not far. It's not far from Egypt, not far from Israel. And there he spent time, and that's where he found his wife, Zipporah. She was from Midian, because he started to work for Yisrael, who we know was the Kohen. He was the big high priest, the leader amongst the nation. And in that nation of Midian, Moshe Rabbeinu ended up living for a few years, watched Yisro's sheep, married Zipporah, his two children were born there, and then he left. That's the first place we have them. Then we have Yisro himself coming to join the Jewish people, and it mentions that he's Kohen Midian, so we hear the name again. But we know that Yisro didn't remain part of Midian. We say that he now identified more not as Kohen Midian, but as a Jew, right? Whether, according to some opinions, he did convert. According to other opinions, he didn't necessarily convert. But he definitely took on the belief in one God, the Jewish God, right? And of course, his daughter became Jewish, his grandchildren became Jewish. So he became more identified with the Jewish nation. But Midian is still a nation, and then they play a role. Yes.
What does it correspond to?
I know, it's a good question. Probably Jordan, I would say, yeah, now. Because it's right across, it's like on that side, yeah, yeah. It's hard to know exactly, but I think so. It's just interesting. So what does it represent at the end? So at the end of the 40 years, not all the way at the end like we are now, but just a little bit of time before we get to the end, the Jewish people are now coming closer to entering the land of Israel, right? The 40 years are almost over. And we know that at that time, there were a few wars that the Jewish people fought. Mainly, they fought against the nation called Ammon and Moab, Sichon and Edom, Sichon and Og, right? Sichon Melech Emori, Og Melech Habashan, they were giants. And the reason that they fought against them, remember what we said? We did that last, before the break. So the Jewish people were a whole nation, they were traveling through the desert, they were sort of going this way, and then they were going to turn to cross the Jordan River, to enter the land of Israel and conquer the seven nations that lived in the land of Israel. But this part over here, on this side of the Jordan, they had no goal of conquering, right? They had no goal of antagonizing the people. All they wanted was to be given the ability to pass through, right? So that they can travel. And remember what happened? Some of the nations said, first, depending on which nation, some of the nations said, no, you can't come through. Some of the nations didn't just do that, but they actually went out to war. They started a war with the Jewish people. So over there, the Jewish people had no choice, right? They had to fight back. So that was some of the wars that happened. One of the nations that they went on the side of was Midian. Midian, they didn't fight, But what happened with Midian? So this is very interesting. We say two things. When the Jewish people were camped across from Moav, remember Moav actually is where Ruth will come from, but right now it's a nation that the Jewish people do not want to conquer. They don't want their land. They don't want anything. They just want to pass through. But Moav got scared. Moav knew that the Jewish people were, yes, going to be conquering the land of Israel. They didn't want them to. In that time it was called Canaan. And they decided that they were going to come up with a plan. And do you remember what they did? This is the famous story. Moav hired somebody called Bilam, right? And he was the one that gave this whole idea of the Jewish people, of course, he wanted to curse the Jewish people. Instead, he ended up blessing them. And then that didn't work. So then they decided the best way to get the Jewish people is by causing them to sin. Do you remember? That's when they sent out, and that was together with Midian. They sent out the princess, Cozbi. She was the princess, Cozbi bas Tzur. Tzur was one of the five kings of the nation of Midian. And the Midianites were in collusion. And what they wanted was to cause the Jewish people to sin. They knew if they sinned, they would be finished. Hashem would not be on their side, and they could very easily overcome them. We know what happened. It actually, unfortunately, worked partially. And the Jewish people, especially from the tribe of Shimon, remember we said Shimon's prince, and they did sin. And there was a terrible plague, and 24,000 Jews were killed at that time. But nevertheless, the plague did stop. And Midian didn't overcome the Jewish people, right? They weren't able to destroy the Jewish nation. That's not what Hashem wanted. Most of the Jews weren't part of the sin. And therefore, 24,000 died. But they're finished with Midian in that sense. They go around that nation. And now they're going to be entering the land of Israel. But, Hashem says, there's one thing Hashem says to Moshe. Before you pass away, now Yeshua is the one that's going to take them into the land of Israel. It's not going to be Moshe, we know, unfortunately. Moshe doesn't have the merit to take them in. But Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, there's one last job that you have to do before you die. And it's interesting, he says it this way. And once you complete this job, you can actually die. That's what he said to Moshe, which is interesting, which means, if you think about it, it means in a sense, it gives Moshe a little bit of leeway to say, let me take this job a little bit slowly and maybe I can prolong my life. But we know Moshe doesn't do that because the Jewish people are about to enter the land of Israel. And as long as Moshe is alive, they are not entering the land of Israel. And Moshe, we know, loved Hashem, loved the Jewish people, and loved the land of Israel. And he knew that where would the Jewish people be complete? Only when they enter the land. So to him, it wasn't a question. Whatever he had to do, he would do. The one last job that he had to do was, and this is what it's called. It's interesting. It's so not the, you know, the usual that we say. It's not the usual trait that we Jews praise ourselves with. But Hashem says to Moshe that he should avenge the honor of the Jewish people and fight against Midian. So it's a war of revenge. That's what it is. Because they caused you to sin. They caused 24,000 of your people to die. There is something that they owe. There has to be. That there has to be a war against them. They have to be made to pay for what they did. Now, before we go inside, because we're going to see today, I feel bad. It's going to have to be done. It's quite a long concept in two parts where, as we know in Torah, everything comes on many layers. So there's the simple story, which we're going to see today. It's not so simple, but to understand that, you know, what's going on. And of course, there's the spiritual part and what it really means for us. I'm just going to give you a drop of a preview to the spiritual part that we'll do more next week and how we relate to it. Because even though this is a story that happened thousands of years ago, if we read it in the Torah and if it's written in the Torah and recorded, it means it has something to do with us. So what does Midian represent? So there's many ways we can look at it. On one level, it represents all this negativity. All the negativity of A, non-belief in Hashem, because they really wanted them to serve idols. That was their whole goal. As well as immorality, right? That's what they called the Jewish people. They sent out their girls, and some of the Jewish men were enticed, and they did do terrible things. So these two traits of A, idol worship, and B, immorality, which we know comes down to the point, if you want to understand it for us, it's belief in Hashem, emunah, and betochen, as well as the concept of kedusha, holiness. These two things is what Midian represented, that it fought against and it weakened in the Jewish people. And this is something that we have to realize, that we have to always be secure in the knowledge that we are working on those two areas, that they shouldn't get weaker. So when we talk about avenging Midian, what we mean is that we have to constantly be on guard, that we cannot allow anybody or anything or any experience or any nation or any force or any philosophy to come and weaken our faith, or to come and weaken our sense of holiness, of who we are as a Jew, what makes a Jewish life different than the world. So these are the things that they're fighting, and that's why it's an eternal fight. Okay, but we have to understand simply. Let's see the level, and then there's even a deeper thing, and this is so magnificent. I feel bad, because I'm going to tease you next week, we're going to do, it's such a beautiful concept, that the word Midian, preview, quick preview, actually comes from the Hebrew word madain umiriva, which means to fight, to be not united. And this is such a way, I think, unfortunately, we relate to it so much. We'll see next week. This is the concept of when the Jewish people don't feel a sense of unity, are not able to understand each other or tolerate each other or opposing points of view in another because of such a strong sense of self. And it says that if we don't fight Midian, there is no way we can enter the land of Israel. There is no way that we can conquer the nations that are there to stop us from inheriting the land if we have what we call Midian Madain Umeriva, this concept of antagonizing, this feeling of, as we say, this very strong feeling of ego, of self, to the point that we cannot tolerate another. This is really what we're going to see next week.
No unity.
Isn't it great? It's absolutely, it's so scary sometimes when you learn how, that's what we're going to see next week. Next week we're going to see a beautiful, it's a Hasidic discourse which explains it, and it's like it could have been written today. So, and that you can see like as if, anyways, but we'll see that next week, because today we have to see the story. History repeat, exactly, Rona. Yeah. Exactly right. And that's why we have to learn it always, so that we should strengthen ourselves, so that we should know and be aware and try and work on it. Because the truth is that it's easy to talk about it, but practically it's not so easy to, you know, as we know, with all these things, you know, faith, holiness, unity, these are easy words to throw around, but practically to internalize and to live it. The fact is that as a human being, Hashem made us that we do have a sense of self. And when we believe something, we think we're right. And somebody else believes something else, we think they're wrong, right? If it contradicts what we believe. And it's not easy. It's not simple to be able to have that openness, to see things from different points of view and to tolerate another person and still maintain your belief. It's very hard. It's very hard. But we'll see. We'll see. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it next week, Amir Tashem. Okay. So now, sure.
The two sisters.
Exactly.
But Midian, what's the origin?
You're asking a very good question, and I should know, and it is Mechumash Bereishis, and Sylvia, I'm going to check. Okay? I should know, and I forgot. It also comes from one of, but I don't remember from exactly who. I'll check.
Okay?
I'm going to remember to write that down. Okay. Okay, so let's go inside now and see some of the psukim here that we have in front. So if you look at your sheet, the one that has, it says the complete, this time I made it from a different thing, not from the art scroll, this one, the complete Jewish Bible. So let's look at a few of the psukim so we get an idea of what's going on, as we say, just, you know, in the Chumash. Okay, so Vayidabra Hashem on Moshe Lemer, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, sorry, I just want to, okay. Yeah. Nikaim Nikmas Bnei Yisrael Me Eis Hamidyonim Achar Te Osef Elamecha. So you see, he says clearly, take revenge. You see the word revenge. It's interesting. Revenge for the children of Israel against the Midianites, afterwards you will be gathered to your people. Now we have this language of gather to your people before in the Chumash. Gather to your people means you will pass away. That's what it means. It means your neshama will be returned to its original source. Now interesting, this is a very fascinating thing. Let's see first what Rashi says, and then we'll discuss even just a drop. He says, what is Me'es HaMidyanim? So he says, who do we have to avenge? So he says, V'loy Me'es HaMayavim. We don't take a revenge against the Moabites, even though they also were part of this whole story. Shahamayavim nichnesu ledavar machmas yira, because they were involved in the matter out of fear. Shahayu yireyim mehem shayiyu shaylu lemaisam. They were afraid that the Jewish people would plunder them. In other words, that if they entered their land and passed through, maybe they would do what other people might do, because they didn't know that the Jews are different. And they might, because they're a big nation, as they're going through, they might plunder, ruin the fields, steal, whatever it may be, cause wreak havoc. So maybe you can find an excuse. Obviously, we don't excuse them totally. But we're saying maybe you can understand the motivation for why they would have been afraid and found different things that they can do to stop the Jewish people. But he says, as he says, Shalai Nemar Ella Aval Tiskar Bamulcham, but because the Jewish people were only commanded not to actually fight against the Midianim. I just don't know how to use this computer, of course. Sorry, because it's a different one. I can't figure out how to scroll. Oh, is it going? Slowly. Sorry. It doesn't have a mouse. Okay. Be patient. Okay. You shouldn't fight against them. But he says, but it doesn't say that you can't, like, antagonize them, as we say. Okay, aval midyanim, but the Midianites, nisabru al rivlei lahem, they got involved in a fight that had nothing to do with them. The Jewish people were not going through their land. So that's why they need to be taken of it. You understand? So they had no excuse. It was pure hatred, as we know. Unfortunately, this is the way it works in the world. We see it nowadays. Some people, you might find the reason why they might be upset with the Jewish people. And then there are most people that have nothing to do with anything of the story. And for some reason, they take up the fight, you know? For what reason? No reason. So these people, it's easier to understand why we say to avenge them. Okay, then there's another thing. He says, Davar Acher, why only the Midianites? Mipnei shnei prey dais tayve shiyesh li lahaytzi mihen, rus hamayaviya v'nama hamaynis. Why don't we take revenge against the Moabites? Because the language in the Medrash is two good dogs. In other words, there will be two geirim, two people who will convert from the nation of Mayav, whom I have in mind. One is Ruth and one is Nama. Nama is from Ammon, but Nama married King Solomon, Shlaima HaMelech, and we know that Ruth is the great-grandmother of David HaMelech, right? So because of them coming out of Mayav, Hashem says, I will leave Mayav as a nation, I will not destroy them. We have to leave them alive for now, at least, because there's something good that's going to come from them. Okay, but I want to understand one thing before we go further. In the pasuk, sure.
Where was Jethro
in all this? Okay, so Jethro is, he wasn't part of Midian anymore. So according to many opinions, he had actually
put a good word in.
For the Midianites, eh? Yes. So this is a very good, you know, Sheila, you're asking a good question, because we're going to see how this unfolds in this war. Moshe was married to a Midianite. And not only that, but the Midianites had given him refuge, right? So he had gone there, they had allowed him to stay, permanent residency, while he was running away from Parai. And the truth is, that's why, we'll see soon, Moshe himself does not lead the war. He organizes it, but he can't actually lead the war. Because you can't do negative to somebody who's done something positive to you. He still owes them something, even though they're such not good people. It's interesting. Okay, but yeah, Yisrael is not there. So it's interesting, because Yisrael, he didn't identify any more with them. They actually shunned Yisrael after he decided that there was one God, and he became, you know, as we say, more part of the Jewish people. But coming back to something else interesting, we said that Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem says to Moshe that he should avenge the Midianim, and afterwards you're going to be gathered to your people, you're going to die. So the big question, and we're going to just ask the question, we'll see soon a little bit more how it unfolds, is why is Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, so important in this war? In other words, First of all, why is it that this seems to complete his mission? And without this, his mission is not complete. And the other thing is, why does it have to be him? Couldn't it be Yeshua leading the war, just like he leads the wars in Israel, which he will lead? So obviously there's something specific connected to Moshe that has to do with this war in Midian. Now, you've just alluded to it a little bit, because we have something very interesting. Moshe was both given refuge in Midian, and he married somebody from Midian. What could the Jewish people suspect in Moshe? That perhaps he has a soft spot for Midian. Maybe he still feels something for them. Maybe he still, you know, so to speak, will protect them, even though they've done such terrible things, and they would like to do even more terrible things to the Jewish people. So therefore, Hashem says to Moshe, to clarify, let's just make it black and white. You don't have any, and he didn't have any soul. You know what's good. You know what's evil. And you know that when something poses a threat to the Jewish people, whether it be physically or spiritually or both, you're ready to stand up for it. Now, doesn't mean he could himself go and fight, but he can organize the Jewish people, lead them, so to speak, from behind the scenes, and inspire them. And definitely not stop them from fighting. And also, because his wife was from Midian, he had to show that he had no sympathy to them. This was a very big thing. Okay. But this is an interesting word, because if you see, it doesn't tell us exactly what they have to do. Now, I know I'm going to say something not politically correct, but this is a fact. We know that in Torah, we have a concept that when the Jewish people were told to fight against Amalek, we know the nation of Amalek, which I know is held up now also, the only word you can use that we are meant to do to Amalek is the word that they use now, genocide. But it does have a pre coming before it. In other words, the nation of Amalek started up with us first. You remember, they came to us when we were after we had crossed the sea. Remember, in just last 2 weeks ago, Parsha, we were not bothering them. They came to us and they fought against us. They wanted to destroy us. Once they started, Hashem said, once they've antagonized, well, you destroy them. And we know with Amalek, what we are told is that we should kill men, women, and children. That's a fact. And not give them any way out. Amalek is not given, we don't say to them, let's first make peace, do you want to live? No, there's no peace treaties with Amalek. Amalek is meant to be eradicated. Look, nowadays we don't know who Amalek is, so there's no nation we eradicate. It doesn't exist now, because from the time of King Ashur, the king of Assyria, remember at the end of the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, he mixed up all the nations. It says I don't know what the word in English is, but he took one people and he put them in another place. There's no true blood Egyptian, there's no true blood Amalek, there's no, nobody. Nobody is what they were originally. Everywhere, exactly. Everybody took on there. So there's no Amalek now. But spiritually, we still have that concept of eradicating what Amalek stands for. But nevertheless, coming back to that time, Amalek, it was told that you have to kill all men, women, and children. With this war, it is very not clear. Were they meant to, A, avenge, meaning wreak havoc in the country? Maybe. That's one way. In other words, what does wreak havoc mean? Interesting, the commentaries discuss one way of doing that is going into a country and literally stopping up their wells, cutting down their fruit trees, destroying the highways, so to speak, and the homes, which means make life very, very uncomfortable and give them a very big job to be able to rebuild, which wouldn't mean that the people would feel, in a sense, the fear of this nation that did this, and therefore be subjugated, so to speak, and cripple them financially, but not necessarily, yes, kill the soldiers, obviously, anybody who's stopping them, but not necessarily kill any woman or children or anything like that. That's one way. And the truth is, it doesn't say anything about that. It doesn't say you shouldn't. And the Ramban Nachmanides says, perhaps that was the intention originally, and that was what Moshe Rabbeinu thought would happen. Now, there is another way, that you go into the country and you kill all of the males, because not only the soldiers, but any male can become a soldier, but you let the woman live and you let the children live. Or there's a third way. And then there's also the animals. With Amalek, you even kill the animals, which is very interesting. But putting that aside, or perhaps you kill all of the men and the woman, you only let the children live. And with the children, it's also interesting, we'll see in this war something fascinating. I don't know if it's unique to this war, but it seems that they did, we'll see, they did let the children live, but only the girls, not the boys. And only girls under a certain age, under the age of 9, which is quite a fascinating thing. So this is what ended up happening here, that they did kill, end up killing all of the men, all of the women, all of the boys, but the girls under the age of 9 were allowed to be kept alive, and they became part of, I don't know, somehow, whether they converted or they were just servants in the homes of the Jewish people, but they became absorbed in the nation. It's very interesting. But initially, it's not clear what was meant, and it's true, it wasn't clear. And we'll see that when they do the war, they themselves don't even know what to do, the soldiers. Okay, but let's see now. Let's continue and see what happens. The next pasuk in pasuk gimel says, "Vayedaber Moshe el ha'am." Moshe spoke to the nation, Lamar, saying, and these are very famous words. Heicholtzu. Heicholtzu means arm yourself, strengthen yourself, prepare yourself for war. Me'itchem anashim, from among you men, latzava, for the army. V'yihiyu al Midyan, and you will beat, so they can be against Midyan. Loses, again it stresses, Nikmas Hashem b'Midyan, and carry out the revenge of Hashem against Midyan. Interesting. When Hashem gave the command to Moshe, who did he say is taking revenge for? Did you see in the first pasuk? What does it say? Hashem says, avenge who? Ah, the children of Israel. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he gives it over to the Jewish people, what does he say? Take revenge for the Lord. He's changing it. It's interesting. Fascinating. Okay, what's going on here? Who is it? Who's the revenge for? The Jewish people or Hashem? Okay, so remember we mentioned, what did Midyan do? One thing they did was they came out with their girls. So they caused the Jewish people to sin, immorality, and idol worship. But they also ended up, in because of that, causing a plague, and 24,000 Jews died, right? So, in a sense, there was a double problem here. One thing was the relationship between the Jewish people and Hashem that seems that they caused damage, right? So that was Hashem, so to speak, war. But they also caused physical damage. Jews died. So, interestingly, Hashem is more worried about the damage for the Jewish people. Moshe, representing the Jewish people, is more worried about Hashem's honor. And that's why he says it this way. That's one opinion. Another opinion that tells us something interesting. That if Moshe Rabbeinu would tell them that they should avenge Midianites because of what they did to them, to the Jewish people, the Jewish people would say, no, we don't mind. In other words, we'll forego our honor. Just like Hashem is foregoing his honor, because Hashem said, I only avenge the Jewish people, not my honor. So the Jewish people could turn around and say, we also forego our honor. We don't care. Like, in other words, the damage that he did to us, it's all right. We'll put it aside. But that's why Moshe Rabbeinu is not stupid. And he says, no. This has to happen. I know it has to happen. And therefore, I will tell them it's for Hashem's honor. The truth is, because it's true, it is for Hashem's honor. Because the truth is that the Jew and God is one thing. And even if we want to, we can't separate. We all know that no matter what, no matter how many Jews now, or the ones who are a little bit self, whatever, I don't know, whatever you want to say, and think that they're going to get up and say, whatever, I don't want to use any examples, but we all know the examples. There are, thank God, few of them now. But they're loud, and they start to say, the poor, whatever, you know, Rachmanis, and instead of looking at the... Nobody looks at them as anything. Nobody even cares. A Jew is a Jew, and we all know what he is. And everybody identifies us as a Jew. And a Jew represents God in this world. We are one. Our religion, whether we're religious or not, it doesn't make a difference. A Jew is a Jew is a Jew. That's fact. So there's no separating. Another interesting thing. Why does this stress it this way? Because Moshe knew something. He knew that since the Jewish people will know that after this war, he's going to pass away, right? So in other words, his passing is dependent on fighting this war. So what's going to happen when he goes to them and says, come on, let's go, get ready for war? What are they going to say? No way. I'm not fighting this war. After this war, you go. We're not causing you to die. No way. We don't want that. So what does he say to them? He says, you have to avenge Hashem. They know there's no choice. No choice. They have to. They have to. Another fascinating thing is, look, I'll show you here. Let's look at the Rashi quickly. First, he says, Vayidaber Moshe, Afal Pisha Shama Shamisa Saitzluya Bedavar, although you heard that his death depended on the matter, Asa Besimcha V'loy Eichar. He did it joyfully without delay. This is a very powerful thing. I know we've mentioned this before, and I said it before in the introduction, but it's something that we have to really wrap our head around, that he could have done it because he had to. He could have done it just a little bit slower. But to Moshe Rabbeinu, it's such an interesting thing. His life, he was so, we'll see how that connects next week to the concept that we talked about, the ego. Moshe has no ego, right? Remember we say Moshe was the most humble man. That's what it says in the Torah. Humility is Moshe. What does humility mean? Humility means that it's not about him. Nothing's about him. For him, it's all about what's best for everybody else. So despite the fact that this is going to cause, A, that he passes away. Now we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was dying to go into the land of Israel. That's all he wanted to do. And yet he knew he's not going into the land of Israel, right? So for him, this was a very painful part. And yet, because he knew that once he fights this war, the Jewish people are going to enter the land of Israel, he could put their joy, their benefit, their good way in front of his own. This is such a powerful thing. And we'll see, this is the antidote to Midyan. We'll see. Okay, anyways, then we go on, and it says, on the, if you turn the page, the next Rashi, Heicholtzu, just means, like we say, Chalutze, armed for battle, right? Mizuyonim, with weapons. Okay, they're going to go prepared. What kind of people are going to fight in this war? So, usually when you pick soldiers, you would imagine you would pick strong soldiers. People who are, how do you say it? Prepared for battle, right? Trained for war. Fearless, strong. But here, what is our criteria?
They're righteous.
Righteous. That's it. That's the Jews' criteria.
That's a message for today.
It is. Well, we got to work on ourselves. The truth is, it's up to us. That's our job, really, to be honest. This is our, for me, and the soldiers, they're doing the best. They're just incredible. We have to make sure that we, yeah, when we're, that we fight with them, so to speak, as much as we can. And that's what, but over here he says, B'chor lanu anoshim. Anoshim means, when you use the word anoshim, we're not just talking about ordinary people. Chachamim v'yiduim, as we say, wise and renowned, and in our context over here, righteous. We'll see how important it is. In a minute, we'll come back to that. I just want to show you Nikmas Hashem, Sha'aymed Keneged Yisrael, anybody who stands up against the Jewish people, Ki'ilu Aymed Keneged HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's as if he's standing against God. Now, before we go on, I want to just discuss this righteous, because we're going to see, oh, you know, let's look at the next pasuk, and I'll show you something interesting that happens in this war. Elef Lamate, 1,000 for each tribe. Elef Lamate, 1,000 for each tribe. L'chol Mateis Yisrael, from all of the tribes of Israel, Tishlechu Latzava, you shall send into the army. So how big is this army? How many tribes do we have? 12. Okay. How big is this army? 12,000 men. Not big. Very small. Very, very small. Fighting against, apparently, a very strong nation who had 5 warrior kings. Not 1, 5, that's how it was divided. One nation with 5 warrior kings. 12,000. That's all. Soldiers. But why does it repeat Elef Lamata, Elef Lamata? Do you see? 1,000 for a tribe, 1,000 for a tribe. So there's very interesting opinions, and this is such a fascinating thing. It says like this. It could be that every tribe, there wasn't just 1,000, maybe 2,000. But why does it say 1,000? So he says, could be that they chose 1,000 to go to war and 1,000 to daven for those going to war. Okay, that's one way. Fascinating thing. Another thing, 1,000 to go to actual battle and 1,000, it's a very interesting part of the army, to watch the weapons and to cook for the soldiers. So in other words, I don't know what you call them, but the background people in the war. But whichever way it was, according to many, it was actually maybe even 3,000. Because 1,000 went to war, 1,000 went to help them, and 1,000 literally in order to daven for those 1,000 that were at war. Now, obviously, the entire Jewish nation would daven, but there was people designated that that's all they would do, literally day and night, sit and daven for those soldiers. Now, it is said that this is considered a very small army, even by the Jewish nation, so to speak, standards in those times. Why? Why? Why do this? Why, if you're going to go to war, that you don't even have to go, right? They're not threatening you right this moment. Why make it in such a way where it's possible that the other army will defeat you? Why take such a few soldiers? So, if you look at it, one reason could be just a simple practical reason. Because what kind of people do they have to choose? Tzaddikim. How many tzaddikim are there? It's not going to be so easy to find these soldiers. Even this is going to be hard to find. And according to some opinions, what do we mean by tzaddikim? We mean people who weren't involved in the original. Remember when all those girls went out? Okay, so obviously most of the people weren't actually involved in sitting with the girls. But even looking at them, anything, have nothing to do with it. This wasn't so easy to find these perfect men, so to speak, if you want to say, who were so holy and so devout, and so that we can trust that Hashem will make a miracle happen through them. And this is what's going to happen here. Another thing is, what's fascinating and beautiful about this war is that we can see that even though Hashem says it's a war, and they have to go, as we said, soldiers, armed, they're not going unarmed, they have to go armed, but who's really fighting the war? Hashem is fighting the war, obviously, because there's too few of them. There's definitely going to be a miraculous war. So it's a fascinating combination. And this is really the combination that we have throughout our history. We have to do the effort. We have to do as much as we can. Obviously, we do as much as we possibly can in the real natural world to have the best arms, right? So thank God now, apparently yesterday, some of these bombs did land finally in Israel from America, finally. So we do have to get the arms. We do have to have the soldiers trained as best as we can. We do have to do what we can. But we know that every time we go to war, it's miraculous when we win. And we know it. There's nothing to talk about. We can see it so clearly now. Unfortunately, it's so sad. But what can we do? That we as a Jewish nation, nobody even believes how small we are. The smallest, such a small amount of people. The whole world is against us. It's crazy, but that's, you see it so clearly. It's like more and more clear. And we're still here. So we are just a miraculous existence every moment of the day. And this is what's being shown here. So it's quite a fascinating thing. As everything that happens here is literally what we experience now. It's unbelievable. Okay, so 1,000 from each. That's what they have to choose. Specifically righteous people. Okay, let's see what happens next. Okay, interesting. Rashi has an interesting opinion because it says, it does say that there were 12,000. And then it says, L'rabbis shevet Levi, including the tribe of Levi. Because, you know, we say there were 12 tribes, but remember there's Menashe and Ephraim? Yes. So really there's 13. So what happened here? So according to some opinions, Levi didn't send. The tribe of Levi, as we know, I just want a tissue, doesn't matter. I'm just going to get a tissue. Yeah, the tribe of Levi didn't send. But according to other opinions, he did send, and Menashe and Ephraim became one for this war, for whatever reason. Because there's only 12,000, it's not 13. Okay, so whichever way you say it. Now, why wouldn't Levi send? Because we know that Levi was the tribe that worked in the Mishkan, right, in the tabernacle. They couldn't become, they were like the Kohanim and the Levim. It's best if they don't become impure, right? So there was this whole thing. But over here, it seems, according to Rashi, Levi did send 1,000 troops, which is very interesting, quite fascinating. Okay, now, let's see. I want to see something on the next one. Very interesting. He says, then, in the next one, Vayimasru. Okay, so let's look in Pasuk Hey. Vayimasru me'alfe Yisrael elef lamate. See, it says clearly, Shnei Masar elef chalutzei tzava. From the thousands of Israel, 1,000 was given over for each tribe. 12,000 armed for the battle. Now, the language that's used is, was given over. Why do we use such language? Wouldn't people either volunteer or be appointed, so to speak? What's this given over? When you say given over, it sounds like you're being forced, right? Why were they forced? So we know, he says like this. And Rashi tells us, L'haydi'acha shifchan shal raya Yisrael, to tell us the virtues of the Israelite shepherds. What does that mean? In other words, we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu. Kama heim chavivim al Yisrael, how beloved they are to the Jewish nation. Why? Until they didn't hear about his death, Mahu Aimer, what did they used to say? That was a few parshiyos ago. Oid ma'at uskaloni, a little bit more, they're going to stone me. What we're talking about over here is, remember when the Jewish people, many times, when they went through the desert, and there was no water, or whatever, or there was no food, or they decided they wanted meat, whatever it was, what did they say to Moshe Rabbeinu? They used to come stampede. It was almost like they were going to kill him. You know how people treat the rabbi, treat the leaders, anybody, treat each other. We're going to kill you. But then really when it comes down to it, they love Moshe. They don't want him to die. And over here, well, as soon as they heard that once we fight this war, Moshe's going to go, nobody was volunteering for this war. Nobody wanted to fight. And therefore, they had to almost be taken forcibly. They had to be chosen and said, you must go. There's no choice. We have to fight this war because this is what Hashem wants. And that's why he says, once they heard that Moshe's demise was contingent upon the revenge against Midian, they didn't want to go until they were given over against their will. Okay, so now let's see what happens. This is very interesting, the war. I'm going to see a little bit before, at least before. Yeah. Moshe sent them 1,000 to each tribe, Latsava for the army, Oysam, the Espinchas ben Elazar. So who does he put as the general of this army? Who's leading them? Because he can't, we said, we'll see Rashi will tell us why he can't, we said, but it's just a beautiful lesson for us also. So he puts Pinchas. Now who's Pinchas? We know Pinchas, he's famous. Pinchas is the grandson, the grandson of Aaron, right? Moshe Rabbeinu's brother. In other words, it's Moshe Rabbeinu's great nephew. His father's name was Elazar. Aaron had already passed away. Right? Elazar is the Kohen Gadol at the time, and Pinchas is his son. Now, he says like this, Letzavah, he's the one that's going out to the army, and what goes with him? Uklei HaKodesh, with the sacred utensils, the Chatzaitreis, and the trumpets, Hatrua B'yadai, for sounding in his possession. Do you remember in those times, we had this thing with trumpets, that the Jewish people, whenever they would go to war, they would blow trumpets. There's a few reasons. Do you remember why? Some of the reasons why they would blow trumpets? It's an interesting thing.
To inform the enemy.
Okay, so to instill fear, that was one thing. There is like this, it's almost like a victory march, you know, you go with the trumpets and you're already assuming victory. Another thing is also to instill fear in the Jewish people, meaning not fear, but awe of Hashem. To tell them, shake up like shofar, you know, time to do tshuva. You're going to war, you better straighten yourself out. That's another thing. And even just simply, it was, you used to gather. It was like their means of communication. So you blew the trumpet, you knew you had to, you know, stand up and start fighting. Exactly, get up and go. Like the whistle blowing. You know, time to go. So there's many different reasons. These were special trumpets that were used for war. Now, why Pinchas? Who's Pinchas? Why is he the one chosen to be the general? Why not Elazar, first of all? You know, he's the next in line after Moshe as far as leadership. But we can explain why not Elazar very simply, because he's the Kohen Gadol. He has to remain pure. Okay, let's put him aside. But why Pinchas? Why not Yeshua?
He's fearless.
He's fearless. How do we know?
Well, he didn't think about it. He went ahead and he killed
it. Exactly. And in which story was that? Do you remember? That's the story that the Midianites did,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Who did he kill? He killed the Midianite princess, remember? Cosby. He's the one that killed her. Because she came all flaunting and trying to cause the Jewish people to sin. Pinchas had started, right? So Moshe says, you started, you can finish the job. Okay, but not just that, not in a bad way, but in a good way. You started even before you were given the command. In other words, when it wasn't fashionable, when it wasn't something that you can say justify almost, and you have to justify it yourself. So Hashem says you can have the merit to finish. The concept is, we say, you know, there's a beautiful thing we say, mitzvah geireres mitzvah. One mitzvah brings another mitzvah, right? We know even in life, usually we explain it when you wake up in the morning and a person's not in the best mood and they start, you know, complaining, and one complaint leads to another and and everything. But when you start on a good thing, you know, you do one good thing that's difficult for you, the next good thing comes a little bit easier. You know, that's how it is. But we say over here more than that. You started to do such a good thing to defend the Jewish people and to cause the downfall, so to speak, of Midian. Initially, it wasn't a downfall. It was just that they stayed away. But you were the one who stood up. So now Hashem says you can have the honor to lead them in war and to get rid of the Midianites totally. And that's what Pinchas does. So Moshe couldn't fight the war. Let's see. I think Rashi will tell us, as we said. Okay, so let's see. He said, another interesting thing, beautiful. It says, Oysam ve'es Pinchas, Magid shahaya, Pinchas shakol keneged kulam. Pinchas was equal to all of them, meaning all the soldiers. That's how righteous he was. Pinchas was as righteous as all the 12,000 righteous ones. He was so great. And then he says, why did Pinchas go? So as we said, because Hashem says, one who started the mitzvah, right, because he killed Kasbi Bastur, he should finish. But another interesting thing. Because remember we mentioned, who was Pinchas? What's his yichus, so to speak? So Pinchas' father is Elazar. Elazar's father is Aaron HaKayin, right? But who's from the mother's side? What's his yichus? So we say that Pinchas had interesting yichus. He came from Yosef, and he came from Yisrael. Remember we said that then, when we talked about Pinchas. That's his background. So he has Yosef's blood and Yisrael's blood. So Yisrael, we said, is from the nation of Midian. Oh, okay. What does Yosef have to do with Midian? This is a fascinating thing. I don't know if you remember in the story of Yosef. When the brothers initially sold Yosef, who did they sell him to?
Oh, Midian.
Midianites, exactly. And who did the Midianites sell him to? The Mitzrayim, the Egyptians. So, interesting, we know that the Egyptians in that time even were known as a very immoral nation, a very low nation, right? It was one of the most immoral societies. It wasn't a nice place to be. And we know exactly what happened to Yosef, right? He was sold, and he went into the house of Potiphar, and Potiphar's wife tried to entice him, exactly. So Yosef was put constantly under the threat, the stress, so to speak, of keeping up his moral code, even while being alone far from his family. This was a very difficult test. So now comes Pinchas, and he says, I'm going to avenge my grandfather for my grandfather. Because you Midianites, you sold him to the Egyptians and put him into such a difficult life. I'm going to take revenge for what you did. That's so interesting. It's an interesting thing. In other words, what's the idea? It's a very fascinating thing. It's not that he would have chosen, he wouldn't have done this on his own, unless Hashem had appointed him right here. But it means that it was personal to him. And when it's personal, you fight better, right? You care more. You have to care about what you're fighting for. And this is in life generally. The word fighting means what we stand for, it has to be personal. We can't live our life detached and say, you know, I'm keeping this because there's no other way. What could I do? I was born, whatever. It's my tradition. It has to mean something to you. When it means something to you, you fight properly and actually you're successful. And this is what happened here. So we can see that's what it says that he's from. Okay, so that's why we chose Pinchas. And then there's the last thing Rashi tells us, just on a simple level. It says, Shahaya Mishuach Melchama. Just a fascinating thing. There was a job in those times that was called the priest who was anointed for war. What does this mean? It's a beautiful thing. That besides for the soldiers going to war, who would go to war with them, was somebody who was from perhaps the tribe of Levi, in other words, from the holy tribe, who would be there to inspire the soldiers. But he didn't just stay in the background, but actually go out to war with them. And this was a very important part, keeping up the morale, and as well as obviously the focus of what they're fighting for. So it made sense that he should be the one to lead the war. Okay, so he is. What it says, Kli Kodesh, that holy advent. What went with them? This is such a fascinating thing. I'm going to finish with this. It's a very interesting medrash here. But what went to war with them? So according to Rashi, we'll see next week there are other opinions, but according to Rashi, the actual Aron, the Ark, with the Luchais. Could you imagine war where bloodshed and you take the holiest object and you go out? Because we know, because as Jews, when we're talking about fighting, we don't just fight because we don't want to kill. That's not the Jewish way. But obviously we have to here, right? And when we're talking about the holy object, the Aron obviously, first of all, keeps their focus, as we said, as well as gives them protection and makes them realize and remain holy and focused on what's important and what's leading them. And the tzitz. What's the tzitz? Do you remember that part of the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, he had 8 articles of clothing. One of them is called the tzitz. The tzitz was that headband that he wore that said Kodesh LaHashem, holy to God. This was quite, there was a few articles of the Kohen Gadol that were holy. One of them was that Urim V'Tumim that we'll talk about next week, because that's one opinion also. You know, the one that had those, that like the breastplate, then it lit up, you know, and the special name of Hashem. But according to Rashi, it was the tzitz that went with them. Why? So look what Rashi says. Why? Okay, so because he says Shahaya Bilam Imbahem, Bilam, even though Bilam is not from Midian originally, but Bilam was at one point an officer in Midian. He left Midian, but now he came back. Why did he come to Midian? Okay, so it doesn't say over here, but I'll tell you why he came back. Because he heard that 24,000 of the Jewish people had died in the plague, so he said, whose idea was it to send those girls out to cause the Jewish people to sin? It was my idea. So now he's going to collect payment. He says, I gave them the idea. It was successful. Therefore, I want to get paid. So he finds himself there. Now, he says, and what was Bilam doing? U'mafriach malchei midyan b'kshafim. And we know that Bilam was very steeped in magic. So what he did was, through his sorcery, he was able to make the Midianite kings fly. Now, I know this is hard for us to understand, and however we're going to take this, children's cutie. A lot of times, I don't know if you ever see, like, you know, they bring home the Parsha. So I don't know if you've ever seen the picture. There's a picture of the 5 Midianite kings flying and the Jewish soldiers going to war. Okay. Now, what happens? That they're flying, they're going to be more successful. Because if the one on top has the upper hand, they can throw their arrows and the Jewish people won't be, and the soldiers won't be able to kill them. So what happens here? Something very interesting, it says. And not only did he cause those kings, but he himself was flying Bilam. He says, so what happened? Here lahem es hatzitz. So Pinchas showed them this tzitz, you know, this headband. Shashem chakuk bay, that Hashem's name is engraved on it. Veheinayflim, and they would fall down. In other words, he took the wind out of their magic and they would fall down. And that's why it says that they fell al chalaleihem, on their
swords.
Exactly, on their swords. According to some opinions, they literally fell from up high down on, they were killed on their sword. Or they fell down to the ground and they were able to be killed then, or taken to Misha to be killed, whichever way. Shenayflim ala chalolim min ha'aver, they were fell from the air on top of those slain. V'chein bebilam kosev al chalaleim b'sefer Yehoshua. Now, so there's one way to understand it just on a simple level. There was magic. We know we don't have magic now. In those days, somehow, they were able to fly and whatever. But let's just say you want to, not that's hard for us to relate to. A way that we can, yes, relate to this very strongly is that what did Bilam do? He caused them to fly. What does that mean? It means that he had this whole dialogue going with the upper realms, meaning he said, these Jewish people, they think they're so righteous. We know what they did. They sinned. They actually sinned. Maybe not these specific soldiers, but the Jews that they're representing, right? They sinned. They don't deserve a miracle. They don't deserve that we should die or that they should have the upper hand. And he went all the way up to the highest level of courts. That's what it means, he flew in the heavens, to the highest court before God. And there was no answer. The angels didn't know how to defend the Jewish people, because it's true. They did sin until they come before God. And God says, my nation, even when they sin, they're still my children. They're my children. And I decided that now it is time to take revenge. It doesn't matter deserving or not. I love them. They're going to be victorious in this war. And as soon as that happens, all of the arguments that Bilam has is deflated. And it's like he comes down. In other words, finished. They can be destroyed. And this is what we hope for now. That no matter what, deserving, not deserving, we say, Hashem has protected us in an interesting way. We want a more revealed way. But we are here. We have survived all the thousands of years. But we want a real survival without all of the, you know, all the terrible things that happen. And Hashem should show his true love, as we know that he does love us. And at last week's parasha, when we became his nation, it says that we are his children. And just like a parent is very easily forgives their children, it doesn't go the other way, but that way it does go. A child can do many, many things wrong and a parent still forgives them. So too, we believe Hashem will forgive us, and Hashem does forgive us, and Hashem overlooks. And Hashem says, yeah, we've made mistakes, but he finds all kinds of excuses, and they're real. Called exile is hard. Hashem is not revealed. The challenges are very difficult. And we try, and he knows that we try. So therefore, he says to all the nations of the world who bring up all the terrible things that they want to bring up against us, you have nothing to say. It doesn't matter what you say. They are my people, and I will protect them. And therefore, as we can see here, it should happen now. Just like Bilam and all those kings fell, and they did, and that was it. And we'll see next week, we're going to read how they were all destroyed and the miracles that happened. But it should be in Mirtz Hashem in our time. We should see it in a revealed way, please God. So we'll stop here for now. But like I said, next week we'll see more the meaning.